Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hey everyone, welcome to the big show today. You might not know this if you only listen to the free Tuesday and Thursday shows, but you're missing one of the most exciting 90 minutes of the week, our After Party podcast with me and Kimberly Johnson every damn Friday. That's tomorrow, by the way. Go to bobseskashow.com and sign up to hear the After Party while supporting our completely independent podcast for just $10 a month. Not only do you get lots of outrageous conversations about sex, drugs, politics, and rock and roll, but you also get the post-mortem shows for no extra charge, as well as access to our community blog where you can post your own articles. So go right now to bobseskashow.com or patreon.com/bobseskashow and subscribe. Thank you in advance. And now let the cartoons begin.
Broadcasting from Resistance Headquarters, relentlessly fighting back against the clown dictator and his regime of deplorables.
Never give up, never surrender.
This is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
The countdown will begin this Saturday afternoon at 2, and again Sunday afternoon at 2, right here on WDHP-FM, your favorite music radio. Oh, fuck it.
That was right, you're right.
Bullshit. Your favorite music radio. FM, your favorite music radio. That's the way it's got to be read. Let's do it again. You're listening to American Top 40 on QT, WQTW, La Trobe. It's getting set for Westmoreland County. What? La Trobe getting set for Westmoreland County.
Getting it set.
The fuck does that mean? All right. The countdown will begin this Saturday afternoon at 1, right here where you're feeling the... God damn.
Bob Seska!
Today's Rachel Maddow Show Award for Headline Excellence goes to Bob Seska.
The Bob Seska Show.
Oh, man, yet more Casey Kasem. I bet you didn't know he was such a foul-mouthed blue bastard, did you? From our nation's capital, it is Thursday, June 6, 2019, and this is the Bob Seska Show presented by BubbleGenius.com. It's the greatest goddamn soap ever. Hello, my name is Bob. What's happening? What's up?
Hello, Bob.
Hi, day 868 of the Trump crisis, day 30 of the constitutional crisis, 515 days until the 2020 presidential election. And we have a bit of a new and different thing today. Normally, we would take this moment to bring out the goth ninjas, but we have one goth ninja, and filling the seat for the other goth ninja, the T-Rex sized goth ninja, who is on vacation in Florida right now. Thank you, Florida.
Thank you, Florida.
Yeah, yeah. We have the great Rocky Mountain Mike and Jody Hamilton, of course. Hey, both of you. Hello.
Hello.
I'm getting sick of coming in from an up-tempo intro into a goddamn dog dedication. The dead dog.
That's right. You know, I keep getting requests for more Casey Kasem clips, and I'm running out of them. That is our third Casey Kasem clip. Everyone loves these Casey Kasem clips. Otherwise, I wouldn't be playing so many of them on the show. But that is one of my...
The Bob Seska Show is heard on great radio stations like WQXI Atlanta.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites because you can tell the guy in the control booth is going, "Hey, wait, don't do it again. We're great. We're good." And he's going, "Bullshit." Who knows? Who knew he was such a cranky son of a bitch, huh? The late Casey Kasem. What was the deal with him? He ended up not getting buried for like a year or something.
Yeah, they fought over his body, you know.
Wow, yeah, they did. There was awful shit that went on with him. I feel bad for his corpse.
Yeah, so do I. God damn it. And what happened to the picture?
A band called Casey Kasem's Corpse.
What happened to the pictures I was supposed to see? Is Don on the phone? Oh, man. So, of course, Jody Hamilton is from the Bunker podcast. That's on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network, sexyliberal.com, also from-the-bunker.com. Rocky Mountain Mike is also heard on the Stephanie Miller Show and maybe a podcast soon. Is that what's in the offing, Mike?
I'm trying. I've been trying to do this for over a year, but, you know, having a day job and everything else that's going on, it's really been hard to plan for. But now I am retiring. I'm leaving the, you know, my day job is, I've been in IT for 32 years.
Yeah.
I just gave my notice to retire today, like an hour ago.
Wow. So I have
a give a shit burn down chart.
So your first order of business, your first act as a retiree is to be on this show. See, that's I feel honored by that. That's outstanding.
I'm honored. I mean, this is the best day ever.
Your first act is to work for free for Bob.
That's right.
See, well, you're retired,
I'm trying to ease into poverty.
Okay, well, let's dive into all the shit that's going down right now. First of all, as you might have heard, Donald Trump was late for the D-Day ceremonies this morning.
Of course he was.
Because you know why? Because he was whining to fucking Laura Ingraham, for God's sake. Laura Ingraham, and had to sit there and listen to his whining.
Stop whining.
While he's doing, he's on Fox News Channel, and he should have been at the D-Day commemoration. The D-Day ceremonies can wait because Donald has to talk to Laura Ingraham, right? Meanwhile, Morning Mika and Morning Joe, speaking of D-Day, praised Trump's D-Day speech this morning. Mika, in fact, said it measured up. See, we're still doing this shit with he's finally presidential now. She said his speech measured up to the moment and really was a true salute to the unity of the day. Barf, barf. I'm sorry.
I'm going to play devil's advocate here.
OK,
it's the 75th anniversary of D-Day and he is the president. And so you have to walk that fine line of, you know, recognizing the moment and, okay, he's the president. And, you know, maybe the speech was good, but then it needs to, I don't know how you do that. You know what I mean? I don't know how you can commemorate the moment and at the same time say the guy's an ass clown.
Well, did you guys actually listen to, because I didn't watch the speech. I heard, like, excerpts of it. When he reads it, like, imagine an actual person that can read.
Yeah, right.
Versus, like, I am pronouncing words now, and I don't understand the meaning. Because, like, he would say something, and it should be a profound statement, and it would be like,
yeah, yeah. Well, that's just it. He doesn't know how to read a speech. And so the thing is, just because he gets up and delivers a speech without choking on his own vomit doesn't necessarily make for a good speech. And so I'm wondering, was the speech genuinely good, or is this the bigotry of low expectations, or whatever the George W. Bush line was? Are we giving him too much latitude, or was it genuinely good? And from what I heard, it sounded like a standard speech. It sounded like generic D-Day commemoration speech.
I didn't hear the speech, and I didn't hear Scarborough. But I'm going to go out on a limb and say whatever Scarborough did was probably too much praise.
Yes.
Just from what I've heard.
Right. Well, and then Chris Jansing reported Joe Scarborough said the president's speech at Normandy was the strongest of his presidency, with words of strong support for allies. And then Morning Joe added, I hope he means it. Which, you know, I don't think he means. I don't think he was even paying attention to the words he was saying. Again, the words themselves, this was no significant milestone kind of historic speech. This was not Reagan's speech at the commemoration that he delivered a speech at in the middle 1980s. This was something that was pretty, kind of off the shelf, pretty generic. And the fact that he was delivering it makes it even less remarkable because of, as Jody was saying, his inability to actually deliver speeches. And, a part of him's going, boy, I wish I could go off on the fake news right now. I wish I could point out all those people in the back. And he wishes he could do all of his usual bits.
Yeah, he wishes it were a rally for him.
Yeah, right.
Well, but here's the thing about being president. I mean, almost anything you look at that a president does can be made political.
Yeah.
And of course, he turns it up to 11.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just one of those things. And the 4th of July thing is like that. And I think another good example, and I know I'm kind of a space geek, but what NASA is doing right now is a good example, because I guarantee you that there are that politically NASA is probably leans a little to the left.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, because Pence and Trump, when Trump discovered that we weren't going to the moon like next year, they made it a big deal. Like, we have to get to the moon by magic date 2024,
yeah,
which happens to be the year that Pence would likely be, you know, the nominee for president from the Republican side.
Right.
And NASA is just, they're jumping all over this. And they're like, yeah, because they're looking at this infusion of money that they've been wanting for so long to do this thing and be great again, you know,
mm-hmm,
to use a term, that they're, you know, they're ignoring what the underlying reason for this is.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have any, they didn't have any solid plans to do this, but now they're saying that we're going to land on the moon by 2024. And I think it's just another example of people making a deal with the devil to get what they want from this guy who is going to use it for his own glorification.
Right, right. And there was something else with NASA that takes place, I think it's in February. It's going to take place in February of 2021. 1 month after his inauguration. And it was something that was scheduled by NASA. I want to say it has something to do with Mars, something that's really, really crucial, like a big goddamn deal, which is startling because I'm forgetting what it is. But nevertheless, there's something going to happen in March of, or in February of 2021. And I was relieved to see that, because it's possible that if Trump doesn't win re-election and a Democrat goes in, he's not going to get credit for whatever that thing is in February of 2021.
It's the Mars 2020 lander is landing in February 2021.
There you go. That's the thing. Yeah. And so, because you know, if that were to happen and Trump is still president, he's going to completely take credit for it. He says, no one could have expected that we would do this, and I'm president, and it's the greatest landing ever. Blah, 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 blah. All the same bullshit. The Trump is crazy.
Right, again, any president would do that and serve that role and everything.
Yeah.
But this landing thing is specifically, it's like this only happened in the past like 3 months.
Right.
Where they said, holy shit, they don't have the right upper stage to get to the moon, and they don't have, they had like three things they had to put in place. Nobody even had a lander on the drawing board.
Right.
So for them to say, we're going to do this in 5 years is ridiculous, but they're going to do it. And it's because Trump and Pence stepped in and said, we're going to do this. And this is just like the military parade and the 4th of July thing. That's just blatantly, that's it.
Yeah, actually, when you said the moon lander, when you mentioned the moon lander, Mike, I thought immediately back to, I think it was episode 4 of Chernobyl, when they had those remote control moon landers, the Soviet moon landers, on the roof of the Chernobyl power plant, and then they were picking up the graphite and dumping it back into the flaming pit of hell that was the reactor 4, or that used to be reactor 4. And I was thinking along those lines, and I'm going, you know what? Here's a great litmus test, yet another litmus test for how we choose our presidents, and specifically in terms of how we view our current president. Now, we've got a lot of functioning nuclear power plants in this country, one of which is right up the river, right up the Hudson River from Manhattan. It's the Indian Point nuclear power plant, and that one has had all kinds of problems over the years. And I'm not sure, I think they were talking about decommissioning it at one point. I'm not sure if it's been decommissioned yet, but nevertheless, a lot of nuclear power plants out there, several of them right here within close driving distance of where I live, of Washington, D.C. Yeah. And so the question is, the litmus test is, can you imagine Donald Trump and Mike Pence and Donald Trump's cabinet, you know, everyone who would be involved, Rick Perry, for God's sake, would be involved in the process if a Chernobyl type event were to happen here. Now, granted, everyone says, well, nuclear is safe. Yeah, nuclear is safe until it's catastrophic, until it's apocalyptic. Right. You know, it's safe all the way up until that point at which thousands, if not millions, of people are going to be killed as a consequence of that technology.
Yeah, now, I was thinking about this yesterday, not in specific terms like that, but just in terms of a not just a natural disaster, but some, you know, a terrorist attack or something like that, how these guys would totally drop the ball on it.
Right, right. Well, I think, you know, it's a...
Well, like, it would depend on what was attacked. If it's California, they're not helping.
Oh, yeah. No, certainly not. And that, and see, to me, that needs to be an impeachment article.
Unless it's Visalia or Fresno. If it's somewhere in Devin Nunez's district.
Right.
But,
right.
I mean, Orange County didn't go for him either. So, you know, they're out of luck, too.
Yeah, that's true. But
right,
I,
right, right.
I mean, but can you imagine Donald Trump navigating that kind of crisis? Everything that we saw that went right by Jared Harris's character in the series made a series of correct decisions. And the guy whose name I forget, who was played by Stellan Skarsgård, that guy made a series of correct decisions. And in fact, Jared Harris's character in episode 5 said, "Thank you for doing everything that I recommended. It actually saved thousands and thousands and thousands of
millions."
Well,
I think in
a
less dramatic way that China's already taking advantage of it. You know, even though we're supposedly having this trade war with them, I think strategically both them and Putin know that they're going to benefit from their incompetence, from Trump's incompetence. So there's probably lots of things that are going on that are, you know, not as dramatic as a Chernobyl or something like that.
Yeah, I mean,
specifically 5G is a good example, I think.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then, you know, just imagine a Fukushima event happening and Donald Trump is president of the United States. It's not even inside the United States, in Japan. I can only imagine how Donald Trump digests information like that.
Well, first he'd blame Obama first.
Of course.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I think Donald Trump is terrified of nuclear power, but then at the same time, or nuclear weapons especially, I think he's afraid of nuclear, and I'm using his terms now. I just referred to it as
your feet as of nuclear. And yeah, cyber.
He's afraid of sharks and nuclear
and nuclear
and stairs. He's afraid of stairs.
Stairs and slopes. Yeah. That's true. Stairs, slopes, nuclear sharks. Right.
nuclear sharks.
I think that's the name of the show today. By the way, thank you very much. Here's the thing. I think he would panic. I don't think he'd make any correct decision, not based on his incompetence, but just on his inability to grasp a serious crisis like that. And, you know,
given me a great idea for a bit for the new record is, you know, what if Trump were president during World War II?
Oh, God, yeah.
God, how frightening.
Right, right. Or, you know, the longstanding litmus test for a president going in is the Cuban Missile Crisis. How would he handle a Cuban Missile Crisis type event? And yet, you know, we had 62 million people in this country who decided, fuck it. It doesn't matter. Let's experiment with the presidency. Who cares who's president? It doesn't really matter. They don't do anything.
You know, Cuba would be difficult because it's surrounded by water.
Yes, that's true. Big water. He's terrified of the large water. And Donald Trump always has issues with water. And whether it's the big water, it's, you know, what did he say about the hurricanes? It was unprecedented in terms of water. It was...
Yes, in terms of wetness.
Wetness. It was water. It was wet in terms of. It was the weirdest, dumbest thing in the world.
Yeah, exactly.
Very wet in terms of water.
One of the wettest we've ever seen from the standpoint of water.
Water, right? Well, so there would be that.
I actually have a bit about that, but
from the you. Did you do one about the wet water?
I did one about the Puerto Rican water. Would you care to hear it?
Yeah, let's hear it. if you've got it, I would. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I have.
Oh, actually, you know what? I don't think it'll work. Never mind. I can't. I don't think I can play things through this. It's called Big Thick Water, and it's to the tune of Cool Water by the Sons of the Pioneers.
You know what? I don't have that one in my library either. I've got my very own Rocky Mountain Mike audio library here, and I don't see it. I don't see it here. Damn it! Damn it! Damn it! Okay. All right. All right. Never mind. You're just gonna have to do Google search it and find it on SoundCloud or something like that. So
actually, I could probably, you know. Here we go. I've got it right here. Do you want to hear it?
Sure. Let's hear it. Yeah. If you can play it, I think we should be able to hear it.
See if. All my doohickeys work and the schmiggiggies and everything else.
Yeah, get your schmiggiggies in order, for God's sake.
Schmiggiggies are very important.
Yeah.
So the mouse and I are now together in the office by ourselves.
Oh, yes, that's right. Jody and her husband Lonnie are trying to find this mouse that was dragged in by her cat. And it's only partially dead, which is... there it is. That's why it's still living. It's on the way. It's invincible, this mouse. There is a wrong to right. Wait, what was that? That was me. Sorry. My God. Mike.
Okay. All right. So here's the water thing. If you want to hear it.
All day he asked his barren son the definition of an island surrounded by
water. Big water.
Water.
Ocean water.
Those islanders are high and dry, and Trump found out that on all sides is water.
It's an island sitting in the middle of an ocean, and it's a big ocean.
Big water.
Thick
ocean water.
Water.
That's it.
That is great. That is great. And you know why I love that so much? I love the drop-ins of him saying, water.
Water.
Water. Water. Water. All of the water. It's just, oh my God.
In terms of witness.
Yes, the largest in terms of the wettest we've ever seen from the standpoint of water. You think he got to the word water and went, oh shit, what am I going to say now? The wettest we've ever seen from the standpoint of water? Oh, man. Okay. So
anyway, D-Day. So
right. You know, there was a British writer named Nate White who wrote a pretty funny piece, and it's really, really salient in terms of why British people hate Trump. And we've seen, obviously, the large crowds just praising Donald Trump, marching up and down the street in support of our amazingly handsome, vibrant, young president, because they love him so much, because he's such a truth teller and such a genuine article, such the smart, funny, just debonair president. Everyone, you know, the world is just falling in love with Donald. Actually, no, that's not happening at all. Mm-hmm. And here's one of the reasons why the British people hate Donald Trump, or a series of reasons. And I thought this was a really salient look at Donald Trump from the outside, where they're not... They don't have their faces pressed up against their screens every day, against their TVs and their computer screens every day, following the ongoing crisis of Donald Trump. So this is a nice and interesting objective outside view. Okay. A few things. Again, this is Nate White. Why do some British people not like Donald Trump? A few things spring to mind, Nate White writes. Trump lacks certain qualities which the British traditionally esteem. For instance, he has no class, no charm, no coolness, no credibility, no compassion, no wit, no warmth, no wisdom, no subtlety, no sensitivity, no self-awareness, no humility, no honor, and no grace. All qualities, funnily enough, with which his predecessor, Mr. Obama, was generously blessed. So for us, the British, the stark contrast does rather throw Trump's limitations into embarrassingly sharp relief. Plus, we like a laugh, and while Trump may be laughable, he has never once said anything wry, witty, or even faintingly amusing. Not once, ever. I don't say that rhetorically. I mean it quite literally. Not once, not ever. And the fact is, particularly disturbing to the British sensibility, for us, to lack humor is almost inhuman. But with Trump, it's a fact. He doesn't even seem to understand what a joke is. His idea of a joke is a crass comment, an insult, an act of cruelty. Trump is a troll, and like all trolls, he is never funny, and he never laughs. He only crows or jeers. And you know what? That's something I've noticed. Donald Trump never laughs out loud. There was one time, I think, in the past month in which I saw him actually say, or actually mutter the sound, heh. I think I heard him go, heh. And that was the closest I've ever heard to an out loud laugh. Go back through all the video you've seen. Try to remember. I bet you can't point to one single time you've ever heard our current president actually laugh. Back to this article.
He needs to go, or whatever you made that sound. He needs, Jody did it better than me. And do that, yes, in that tuxedo. And he's got the penguin part.
He goes, rah, 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 rah,
rah. There
he
it is.
Didn't make that noise either.
Stephanie mentioned that noise today.
Yeah, I did. And I sent it over, except you know what? I was listening five minutes behind the live feed because I had to go back and listen to something else. And anyway, so I sent it to them and they never got around to playing your funny tab noise when I said the name Maggie Haberman. Anyway. Right. Okay.
clever girl.
Let's see. Did I read that? I don't think I read this part yet. Trump is a troll, and like all trolls, he is never funny, never laughs. He only crows or jeers. And scarily, he doesn't just talk in crude, witless insults. He actually thinks in them. His mind is a simple bot-like algorithm of petty prejudices and knee-jerk nastiness. There is never any underlayer of irony, complexity, nuance, or depth. It's all surface. Some Americans might see this as refreshingly upfront. Well, we don't, the British. We see it as having our inner world, or having no inner world, no soul. And in Britain, we traditionally side with David, not Goliath. All our heroes are plucky underdogs, Robin Hood, Dick Whittington, who I don't. Who is Dick Whittington? I've never heard that one name.
I love that name.
Yeah. It was my radio name in 1976. I was doing radio. Remember that, Mike? I was doing radio and then Oklahoma City. I was Dick Whittington on the air. I was
Dick Whittington? Yeah. Wait a minute. I'm missing that.
I'm just totally kidding because I was 5 years old in 1976. And I
well,
was on the radio.
Well, I lived down the street from a guy named Dick Whittington.
Oh, really?
When I was growing up. And so that's what threw me off.
All right. Well,
he had a really cool guitar and I hated him for it.
My mentions are going to suck now because, you know. I think it's a fairy tale
that's
character.
That's, you know, I worked, when I worked for American Airlines, I worked on the international group for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And I was somewhat close with a lot of people in the London office, and I would go over there. And, you know, it was interesting. I worked with these guys for a year before I actually ever went to London. And then when I got there, it was great because I knew everybody. But I think, like, the 90s version of me was too crass and obnoxious for a couple of them. So I can only imagine what Trump is to the Brits. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, and then you mentioned the fact that all he does is jabs and stuff like that. You know that that's got to come from some deep pain that has always been there, that's never been extricated.
Yeah.
And that's where he's just that's someone who is in pain.
Yeah.
That's how they communicate and think.
Right, right. Well, I think it's a little of that. It's a little of the fact that he's got no core values. I just think he has trouble experiencing joy. I think he's incapable of all these things. I think he's a genuine sociopath. I think he's got...
Absolutely.
Yeah, he's got a serious glitch. He blew a gasket at some point, and consequently, we're all fucked because...
Well, we had, you know, in America, we had 30 years of snarky sitcoms,
yeah,
and then we had 20 years of reality TV,
right?
And to a lot of people, that's what this produced, was that sort of character.
Yeah.
And oh, this is going to be great. He's going to be telling those people who've been running everything what for.
Yeah, well, that's true. And I think that's one of the reasons why they voted for this guy. I think one of the reasons is that he kind of reflects this anger and rage and, you know, laundry list of grievances. And, you know, he tapped into that. He saw what was on Fox News Channel and decided, hey, that's a pretty good shtick. I'm going to do that. I'm going to just land on that. Because obviously he doesn't genuinely feel these things. He just goes along with whatever he thinks is going to work.
No, I don't think Trump sees anything that distinguishes politics from professional wrestling.
Yeah.
I think he sees them as exactly the same thing.
And that is certainly his support. Feel that way, and one of the reasons why I think they're able to support him is because they've got a long history of being able to suspend their disbelief. You know what I mean? It's just whether it's evangelical religion or professional wrestling, or, you know, I mean, going back to what you were saying about reality shows, even. Who are the characters we remember most from reality shows? Who are invariably the
most?
It's
always the assholes.
It's always the assholes. Always the villains, right? Right, Jody?
Right.
It's yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you could go back all the way to the very first season of The Real World and find, oh, the one we remember. Oh, we remember Puck. We remember Puck. Mm-hmm. We remember Lisa Vanderpump, for God's sake. We remember all of the assholes on those shows. And
the naked guy on Survivor.
Exactly. The ones, yeah. The people that everyone
hates. The one that went to prison.
Yeah.
Right.
And the reason we watch is to see these villains. And so, you know, I was saying that throughout the campaign. I was like, watch out for Donald Trump because America loves reality show villains. Those are always the most popular ones, and America sees this shit now, sees politics, thanks to cable news and so on, as being a form of a reality show. Like, what's the next big thing? Who's winning? Who's behind? What's the next big drama? Is this going to make for good drama? Should we play up this drama? Should we fabricate this drama? Should we propagandize it? And so it's like, it's basically now where cable news newsrooms decision desks, whatever you want to call them, are preoccupied with creating, manufacturing drama. And then that happens on Fox News Channel every damn day, right?
Yeah, in 1984, I went back to college at age 29, and so I voted on campus. And I remember standing in line, and there was these extremely old people that were volunteering at the polls, and it was running really slow. And I just made a snarky comment. I said, just imagine, Reagan's even older than these guys. And and this girl that was standing in front of me just whips around and says, well, he's better than Mondale.
And,
Jesus Christ.
And you know, you want to say, how is he better? First thing that Reagan's going to do is he's going to end your student loans, you know, or your grant programs. But I'm sure she didn't know that.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not a new thing for it to be a popularity contest and for people not to be aware of the issues and everything. And that's just a cancer that, you know, I don't know, is Trump going to help us get over that and change?
Yeah, well, I mean, the big question is whether or not we close this giant Trump-sized gap in the door. You know, it's like I always compare it to the Kool-Aid man bashing through the wall. Well, Trump has bashed through the wall, and the question now is, how many more Trump clones are going to come? How many more Kool-Aid guy-shaped people are going to come right through that hole after him? Mm-hmm. And the first one that I see in line is Donald Trump Jr., goddamn idiot, mm-hmm. Who, by the way, doesn't understand irony either, just like his dad. He tweeted this earlier today, or actually, I take it back. It was yesterday. Donald Trump Jr. said, Biden is incentivized to dismiss China threat because his son took $1.5 billion from China, right?
China!
And so the question I have then is, what do you make of this, Don Jr.? Russians make up a pretty disproportionate cross-section of all of our assets. You know, which is something that he has said on video. It's the same damn thing, even if this Breitbart article that Donald Trump Jr. tweeted out isn't entirely accurate. And I would imagine that it's not. But, you know, just taking it at face value, it's no different than Donald Trump Jr. and Donald Trump himself doing business with Russia and then giving all kinds of breaks to Russia, right? That's the compromise. That's, you know, they're deeply and profoundly compromised. And whether it's Trump or Trump Jr., doesn't matter. All right, we got
my only hope is that maybe the next generation just looks at us and says, you know, this is how you got here.
Yeah.
And we're not going to do that. You know, you guys have fucked this up. And we're just not going to play it that way anymore. There needs to be somebody who steps up and makes that sort of game-changing thing in American politics. And who knows? I mean, it's one thing to have liberal policies and let's have Medicare for all and let's have AOC and people like that in the picture. But there really needs to be somebody who has the power to make us change the way we do the thing.
Let's take a quick break here, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about Trump making excuses for dodging the draft. Pfizer is doing weird shit. I want to talk about that. That's going to be a story I think we're all going to be focused on for a while, because they're monkeying around with a possible cure for something, and it just really raises all kinds of red flags in my head. And I don't mean to be conspiratorial. But I'm going to be a little conspiratorial. Back with more show right after these words.
I'm a student.
I'm a professional.
I'm a woman.
And I shouldn't have to worry about walking alone, day or night.
I've heard it all.
Honey, give me a smile.
Harmless catcalls? I never know. I carry Tiger Lady. It's a revolutionary defense tool that's based on one of nature's most efficient defenses, a cat's retractable claws. It weighs less than my phone and is designed to collect DNA. Tiger Lady is discreet and fits in my hand. And when I make a fist, claws come out like a real-life Wolverine. It's easy to use, doesn't require training, and is legal in all 50 states. Get your Tiger Lady today by going to TigerLady.com today.
Tiger Lady makes the perfect graduation gift to prepare her for the world ahead. Get Tiger Lady today for safety's sake at TigerLady.com. And for a limited time, get a pack of four at 15% off. Use the code GRAD and save an additional 20% off your entire order. Go to TigerLady.com. That's TigerLady.com. Tiger Lady, the ultimate gift of personal safety for any graduate.
Hey, this is Frangela, and we host The Final Word with Frangela and Idiot of the Week podcast.
And if you enjoyed this episode, you'll love our show, where every week we talk about real news, real funny. So come on over and listen to The Final Word with Frangela and find it at sexyliberal.com and on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, and everywhere else you get your podcasts.
The Bob Seska Show.
The Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
If you jump
the... All right, welcome back to the show today. Thank you for joining us. We've got Jody Hamilton here from the From the Bunker podcast on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Also, Rocky Mountain Mike making his debut on the Thursday show, filling in for T-Rex David Ferguson, who is in Florida for some reason. He hasn't explained that to me. I have no idea why he's in Florida.
Thank you, Florida.
But he is. He's down there meeting with Florida Man. They're going to wrestle an alligator in while not wearing pants, and then they're going to go to Disneyland or Disney World. Because isn't that what you
and
do in Florida?
Bite off somebody's face.
Yeah, exactly right. That's what you do when you go to Florida. You do crazy shit. All right. I'm going to delve into weird territory here because I'm not typically a conspiratorial person. But when I read something like this, when I read about this Pfizer Alzheimer's cure, apparently, well, let me read this headline. Just give you a sense of what we're talking about here. This is Washington Post. Pfizer had clues its blockbuster drug could prevent Alzheimer's. Why didn't it tell the world? Yes. Good question, Washington Post. Why didn't Pfizer tell the world that it could reduce the risk of Alzheimer's by up to 65% using a drug that they've already got out there? It's Enbrel. They're talking about Enbrel.
Why didn't you tell the world?
Yeah, my God.
Dr. Strange.
Jesus.
So Enbrel can lower one's risk of Alzheimer's? That's amazing.
Well, there was indication that it could, and what Pfizer decided to do was to not put it through trials for Alzheimer's patients.
Why?
Because their internal science apparently led them to believe that it wouldn't make it through the clinical trials. That's their excuse.
Still try.
Yeah, especially when we're talking about Alzheimer's disease here, one of the most tragic and terrible disorders that someone can get.
If it gave somebody a boner, they'd be fine.
Like we're talking about dick pills, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. We're not talking about dick pills, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
We collided on that one.
So he slammed me into the goalpost with that one.
A team of researchers inside Pfizer made a startling find in 2015. The company's blockbuster rheumatoid arthritis therapy, Enbrel, a powerful anti-inflammatory drug. And, of course, Alzheimer's has connections to inflammation. This anti-inflammatory drug appeared to reduce the risk of Alzheimer's disease by 64%. Good God. The results were from an analysis of hundreds of thousands of insurance claims, verifying that the drug would actually have the effect in people would require a costly clinical trial. And after several years of internal discussion, Pfizer opted against further investigation and chose not to make the data public, the company confirmed. Researchers in the company's Division of Inflammation and Immunology urged Pfizer to conduct a clinical trial on thousands of patients, which they estimated would cost $80 million. So they didn't want to invest.
That's chump change. That is
yes!
Nothing.
It's pocket change for these assholes. $80 million is nothing.
God damn it!
And so the cost of this thing, $80 million, to see if the signal contained in the data was real, according to an internal company document obtained by the Washington Post. Enbrel could potentially safely prevent, treat, and slow progression of Alzheimer's disease, said the document. A PowerPoint slideshow that was prepared for review by an internal Pfizer committee in February 2018. The company told...
When you consider how many semi-trucks full of cash they got with the tax cut...
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfucking believable. The company told the Post that it decided during its 3 years of internal review that Enbrel did not show promise for Alzheimer's prevention because the drug does not directly reach brain tissue. Right. So how do you explain all of these people who saw benefits from taking Enbrel?
Yeah. I'm looking at why. It's basically anti-TNF. The TNF activity when you have rheumatoid arthritis is super high.
Yeah.
And that can be a problem with relationships to Alzheimer's disease. So when you take Enbrel, it brings that TNF down, therefore preventing possible Alzheimer's in the future.
Well, see, Jody Hamilton on this show just now basically did all the work that Pfizer could have done in the past year and reached that same conclusion. Said, yeah, maybe we should plunk down the $80 million and do a clinical trial. I mean, my God, the risk of it. I mean, I don't even know what's the rate of Alzheimer's right now. Is it like 1 in 4 people are going to get
it's
it or something?
It's a lot of people. And the thing, the interesting part of them going, oh, we shouldn't try it, is because an anti-TNF drug in a healthy person that doesn't have, say, rheumatoid arthritis or other inflammation issues can increase the risk of contracting other infections, which is part of the side effects of Enbrel anyway.
Yeah. Hmm.
If you watch the commercials, it can cause this or that or the other thing and make sure you get tested and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
Basically, they think that it wouldn't approve Enbrel. Well, then still study it somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, again.
There might be a molecule you can change where that goes away and it still is helpful to Alzheimer's.
Had it proceeded to the point where they had tested in animals, or is that possible?
No, they haven't even started that yet.
No, they just got the indication. I mean, going back to the beginning of this article here. There were thousands and thousands of documents, mm-hmm. hundreds of thousands of insurance mm-hmm. claims showing improvement of Alzheimer's symptoms with Enbrel, just coincidentally. But you can't. The problem is, unless it goes through clinical trials, you can't prescribe Enbrel for Alzheimer's patients,
right?
Because it hasn't been approved. It'd be off label. But it seems to me as if there got to be doctors out there who are going, why not fucking try it? I mean, families of patients, families of Alzheimer's victims themselves who are in the early stages of it are probably going, could you please give this to me?
And most of them probably have some sort of other inflammation in their body anyway, because it comes on at such a late stage in general in your life that you've already got some crap going on.
I mean, again, I'm not one necessarily to question experts, to question scientists, because I'm not a scientist. So I therefore have to defer to the science on this. And they say, and there's a point blank right here, science was the sole determining factor against moving forward, said the spokesman for Pfizer, but it seems to me as if we need to see the science, or what they need to do is share their science, share their findings with other studies, with other groups of researchers who are trying to find a cure for this shit, because maybe they can unlock why exactly it's happening, or maybe actually use Enbrel as a springboard for something else and develop it there. Instead, they just kept it secret. They didn't pursue it. And it only took the Washington Post until now to get this documentation, to get these PowerPoint slides, to find out that it was actually going on. I mean,
well, the other problem apparently with Enbrel, it doesn't get through the blood-brain barrier, which is where we think Alzheimer's originates, but it may not. It might be anti-inflammatory drugs.
Well, is there an analog with another pharmaceutical that might have been pursuing something like this?
I don't know. I mean, I know very little about the research process into Alzheimer's, although we are going to talk here in just a second about embryonic stem cell research with regard to Alzheimer's. But the fact is that they had something here, and again, unless we hear from someone who can clarify why it's not worth pursuing an $80 million clinical trial, or why it's not worth farming this out to other research or organizations who are studying Alzheimer's disease.
Another thing is the cost of the trial itself. Does that include any liability as well? Because that could be a significant factor, maybe.
Yeah, it might be. But again,
they do clinical trials all the time, and they start with animals, and then they move up. The human trials wouldn't be tomorrow on this. This would have to, you know, do the normal.
All I know is I lost my dad to Alzheimer's. Like,
I mean,
seven
I took that
ago.
Drug. I think they call it. I don't know what they call it anymore, for quitting smoking. And that's an antidepressant. And they found that people had stopped smoking taking this drug.
Yeah.
So then they started the trials with that. Like, what was the efficacy? And it worked for me. And that's why they say it's the Chantix, I think is what they call it now.
Yeah.
And they basically go, you can become depressed. So watch out for that, because it's an antidepressant. So that if you have some sort of problems chemically with depression, that drug can exacerbate the problem. You can also quit smoking.
Yeah, exactly right. You were saying, Mike, that you lost your dad to Alzheimer's recently, or six years ago?
7 years. It'll be 7 years in November.
Wow. And I'm sure.
And the tragedy about that was that my mom took it upon herself to take care of him way longer than she should have. He also had diabetes, so he literally needed her to stay alive. And it was, you know, it just finally reached the point to where his bodily functions were such that, you know,
he's got to go into a place. It was only then, like 6 months before he passed, that she finally said, okay, we're putting him in a place.
Yeah.
So it really took a toll on her, just taking care of him all the time.
Yeah, it's got to take a toll on anybody. It is absolutely a nightmare between the hallucinations, between the memory loss, between the confusion and the physical problems that go along with all of that. Just such a nightmare. And it seems to me as if that alone is motivation enough to proceed forward. It says here in this article, though, wagering money on a clinical trial of Enbrel for an entirely different disease, especially when Pfizer had doubts about the validity of its internal analysis, made little business sense, said a former Pfizer executive who is aware of the internal debate and spoke on condition of anonymity to discuss internal Pfizer matters. So it came down to a business decision, didn't it? And you know what? I received so much shit on this show. I think it was, in fact, an after party episode, maybe 3 or 4 months ago. Kimberly Johnson and I were talking about why there isn't a cure for cancer yet. And I just postulated, just absolute speculation on my part, is the thing that a lot of people have come up with in reaction to this Pfizer story, which is that why come up with the cure if the treatment is so profitable? You know, if you're a major corporation, and again, we're talking about CEOs who make decisions and boards of directors who make decisions based on profit, pure profit. They're wired to take the human piece of the puzzle out of the equation. They don't care about lives. They don't care about, well, is this going to kill people, or is this not going to save people that we could otherwise save? This doesn't factor into their thinking. What they do is they strategize based on the bottom line. What is going to help their stockholders? What is going to preserve their golden parachutes and so on? And that is a little bit of my paranoia, a little bit of my conspiracy theorist side. But the fact of the matter is that when you see a story like this, how can you not draw that conclusion? How can you not see that? It's so immensely frustrating. And then when you see someone like Donald goddamn Trump, who, by the way, lost his dad, Fred Trump, died after battling Alzheimer's disease for something like 6 years. And yet Donald Trump sits in wherever he was, in on Air Force One or in the Oval Office or what have you, in Europe or wherever he signed this executive order to defund the NIH's research into embryonic stem cell therapies. Mm-hmm. And again, you have to go, good Lord, the cruel whimsy is just absolutely staggering. I mean, these are...
I think the thing is that he's recognizing that the wagons are circling, and that he's... That he's really in trouble with the presidential election, and so he's doing everything he can to please the base, and this is part of it. I noticed that the National Wildlife Refuges are going to open up hunting to areas that they didn't before, and again, it's just, let's throw more red meat to the base, because I don't know what else to do at this point.
Yeah. Well, you know what this is, Mike and Jody? This decision about stem cell research has entirely everything to do with that fake Planned Parenthood series of videos from, I believe it was the summer of 2015. Remember that guy, David DeLayden, and the Center for Medical Research or whatever the fuck that was? And what they did is they went in and did a series of like James O'Keefe sting videos in which they took the raw video, re-edited it to make it look like Planned Parenthood was selling fetus parts on the black market profit.
And that didn't die. You know, that whole idea didn't die.
Right.
So this is part of that. Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't die even after something like two dozen states, including an entire series of red states and red state governors, conducted investigations into Planned Parenthood in their states and determined that there was zero wrongdoing, including this ridiculous accusation of selling fetus parts.
Right. Well, he has to do everything he can to the evangelists.
Right.
To the I can't speak today. Evangelical.
You too? I can't speak
to say, either. I'm your guy, and this is just one of those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And that's exactly why. Why? Because he's got a big election coming up and he needs the evangelical vote. And so he's going to pander to these hoople heads who have no fucking concept that those videos made by David DeLayden were absolutely 100% fake. And, you know, in fact, David DeLayden was indicted in the state of Texas by crazy Greg Abbott, for God's sake. And one of the things he was indicted for was trying to sell fetus parts. Mm-hmm. I mean, David DeLine, wow. The guy who did a sting operation against Planned Parenthood for that, was indicted for trying to sell pieces of a fetus on the black market or something as part of the sting operation, because he was posing as someone who wanted to
I'm
do that.
I'm telling you, the only thing that anybody has any hope of is we have to find somebody who's a shinier object than Trump. And that's yeah. what it takes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And you know what? Elizabeth Warren last night. Let me just say a word or two about Elizabeth Warren while prefacing the fact that I am not endorsing anybody yet. I am not going to say who I support until, you know, at least December. It's going to be a good long time before I really dig into this whole Democratic primary process. But all of that said, Elizabeth Warren really killed it last night on Chris Hayes. They did a town hall on MSNBC.
Yeah.
And fantastic. She was, you know, and I hate to throw around this word casually, she was inspirational. She was good. Mm-hmm. She was, I mean, I sat there watching and going, you know what? She is 100%. And I know the idea that most politicians are full of shit. It's a performance. There's a performance aspect yeah. to all of this crap.
But, you know, it's so funny because they talk about likability and all that stuff, especially with Hillary and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And watching her last night, I realized that her story is real.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, the uh-huh. stuff that she says is real. And whereas with Hillary, people always took it with a grain of salt. They always said, oh, she, you know, she's cynically doing this or that.
Yeah.
What, fair or not. But you don't get that sense with her. You get the sense that, you know, she really did want to be a teacher and she was led to this naturally.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, the bottom line is that she sounded authentic. She sounded like she absolutely believes the things coming out of her mouth. And we so seldom see that with especially national politicians who can say all of these things and talk to ordinary people and appear on television and deliver major speeches or do little tiny intimate one-on-one events or with a small group of people and still sound just as genuine, irrespective of which format they're operating in. And once again, I got the sense that Elizabeth Warren was the genuine article last night. And I'm not going so far as to say that, you know, she's more genuine or less genuine than anyone else in the Democratic field at this point. It just happened that she was doing a town hall last night and I happened to see it.
Yeah, yeah.
And my reaction was...
Because I think you could say a lot of those same things about Mayor Pete as well.
Yeah, that's true.
Or, you know, Kamala Harris, you know, any of them, really.
Yeah, again, we're... We're very, very lucky in terms of the caliber of the Democratic field. And, you know, I was skeptical for a good long while there that we were going to get adequate candidates. And I think there are maybe five or six candidates right now who could easily defeat Donald Trump, all things being equal. Take Russia out of the equation, take voter suppression out of the equation. And, you know, you have an extraordinarily solid looking field of candidates who can... Who really ought to be able to win in a gigantic landslide against this guy.
What again, excites me is the idea that Texas might be in play. That would be so awesome.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know. And you know what? I think in the most recent poll, I think she's only 1 point behind Donald Trump in Texas if the election were held today, which is pretty strong. You know, and there's actually one other thing I want to talk about. I want to get your reactions to Joe Biden and the latest story to come out about Joe Biden. I'm not bringing up something positive about Elizabeth Warren and then something negative about Joe Biden because I like one and hate the other. This is just the news. I'm just relating the news, so don't at me on Twitter, for God's sake. One last break. We're going to wrap up the show, talk about Joe Biden here for a second after these words.
You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius Bath and Body Products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit BubbleGenius.com and check out our cause-related items, too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius, doing our part to make the world a better place, one bathtub at a time. That's BubbleGenius.com.
Bob Seska!
is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
There's a group called A Sunday Drive, and the song is called Boxing Day. If you want to submit your indie music, send it to bobseska.com/music. Or don't send it to that, because it's not really an email address. Just go to that web page. See, I'm like 1,000 years old now. That's what I'm sounding like. Go to my email and send me an email, damn it. Yeah, you go to that web page and there's a submission thing there that you can send in your music and your links and all that happy crappy. So do that, please, and thank you, and we'll play your music on the show, and especially the Indie Music Countdown. We had a brand new Indie Music Countdown on Sunday, so you want to go listen to that if you had a song in the previous month on the show. And if you didn't have a song, you just enjoy the music because it's just really good stuff in there. All right, Joe Biden. You know, my big concern with Joe Biden all along has simply been the fact that he's Joe Biden. And I look back to his previous couple of attempts to run for president and I go, well, what are people going to see this time that they failed to see those other two times in which he didn't even really make like the top 10 or anything like that? He was just sort of tried and failed and went away. And then Barack Obama made him vice president. I guess it's the Obama factor. I guess it's the fact that he was vice president. I've never been overly impressed with Joe Biden. And I'm going to be completely blunt, completely honest with you about how I feel about Joe Biden. I've got my serious concerns about him as a viable candidate moving forward. And I think a lot of people, once these debates start, are going to kind of reach the same conclusion. Once you see Joe Biden in action, live on a stage with all in contrast with the other candidates, I think we're going to see all of the things that I've been concerned about. And one of the things is, obviously, the ongoing penchant for having to react to everything he says by going, well, what Joe Biden meant to say was, and it's, you know, dot, dot, dot. And it's going to be a lot of that. It's going to be a lot of triage after a major gaffe. And we've got one of our first situations along those lines now, which is that he apparently plagiarized his climate plan.
But I can well imagine it was a low-level staffer and there was no guards put in place to ensure that something wasn't. And this is one of those deals where it's the campaign. There is software that you can run to check and see if something has been plagiarized. And every campaign should have it.
Right.
And because you wouldn't have a situation like this. I'm sure that if Biden personally knew that that was the case, he would put a stop to it. But somebody along the line fucked up.
Yeah. One of the groups he plagiarized from, or one of the groups the staffer plagiarized from, is a group called American Rivers. They have a section on their website about infrastructure, and they kind of horked a little bit of that from that website. It's a fuck up that didn't need to happen, especially when you're a candidate who has a history of issues with plagiarism. You know, you feed the Trump machine by doing that. And Donald Trump hasn't latched onto this one yet, but he's going to. I mean, meanwhile, Joe Biden has come out.
You know, I really think this is a reflection of the size of the field. Yeah. If you think about it, if you have over 20 people running, then the number of qualified people who really know how to run a campaign, they're going to be spread pretty thin.
Right, right. Well, and also, when you have a field this large, the chances are you're going to get a lot of stories along these lines, because that means 20-plus candidates and their campaign teams are all doing opposition research. So, you know, you've got 20 different campaign teams, 20 different groups of supporters and activists and volunteers working for those candidates. So, you know, it's a lot different than when we had just 5 Democratic candidates and then 5 campaign staffs and 5 groups of supporters and so on pouring through each other's shit. So this stuff is going to come out. And I think Joe Biden's...
it's like in the movie The Candidate.
Yeah.
You know, once you step in there, you're surrounded by so much craziness, it's really hard to control the thing. And that's what sunk Hillary in 2008.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think Joe Biden's response to all this was okay. But what happened was, right on the heels of that, he comes out in support of the Hyde Amendment, which, again, to me, the core, the centerpiece of the Hyde Amendment, and I kind of wish Elizabeth Warren had said this more clearly in her town hall last night, but the centerpiece of the Hyde Amendment is that it's a kind of a backdoor ban on abortions for anyone, mm-hmm. anyone of lesser means, so like low income mm-hmm. women are unable to afford abortions because there is no federal funding in terms of support for services along those lines, certainly for that procedure. And so as a consequence, you have a lot of low income people who are either having children because they have no other choice, or because or they're using all of the underground back alley means of having an abortion, either getting drugs on the black market, getting drugs over the internet from overseas and so on, and they're doing it that way. So that's the danger of the Hyde Amendment, apart from being discriminatory against women generally, is mm-hmm. Is discriminatory as a backdoor ban. Literally a backdoor federal ban on abortions for people who can't afford that particular procedure. And so that's why it's bad. And Joe Biden didn't seem to get the memo on all this, or either that or he's, in fact, Rachel Maddow said on her show last night,
she's trying to be in the center.
Yeah, that's exactly what he's doing. And as a result, he's pandering to the middle. He's tiptoeing around them rather than remaining in touch somehow with the base of the party. And the base of the party, who I believe are African-American women, that's what African-American, especially low-income African-American women, need the Hyde Amendment to go away in order to enjoy the same rights as the rest of the country, for God's sake, have the same reproductive rights as everybody else. And of course, that's not happening if Joe Biden becomes president. He's going to defend the Hyde Amendment going forward. And then Rachel Maddow said on her show last night, yeah, Joe Biden didn't seem to understand that this is 2020 now. We're right. Dealing with 2020 politics now.
Yeah, and you mentioned it. I think as we get closer to the debates, more and more that's going to really be evident. And he's going to go by the wayside, I think, because yeah. of that. I'm just predicting that's what's going to happen. The page is turned, and people will see that. And I think it'll be pretty obvious.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the thing is I literally had a male friend of mine who's intelligent go, wait, aren't abortions at clinics free? No, they are not.
Nope.
They cost a minimum of $250. So, and that's at the free clinic, you know, I mean, it hasn't changed much in price over the past 30 plus years, but it still costs money.
Yeah.
And so the fact that he went, really? I'm like, dude, of course you wouldn't know because you're not a chick.
Yeah. Well,
you've probably never taken somebody to the clinic to get it done. You know, it's like, ugh.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the problems.
And you can't get them on Amazon yet either.
No, so not yet.
No, that's right.
You can't order it in.
Yeah,
you can't. They won't come to your house
but
yet.
But they have drones now. There are drones.
There are drones. That's true.
Amazon, the next thing Jeff Bezos is going to work on are like abortion drones to come by.
Speculums come heated, you know, which is nice.
Oh, there's another awesome. Bit. Abortion drones.
Abortion drones.
Abortion drones. Exactly. Oh, good Lord. And on that note...
Yes, that's a good time to wrap up the show, I think. When you end the show on a...
news box.
When you end the
guaranteed
show with a...
guaranteed non-delivery.
Yeah, what's the... what do you get for Amazon Prime? If you sign up for Amazon Prime, it's your abortion is free. So who needs...
Two for one.
Yeah. Who needs the Hyde Amendment to go away if you're going to get free abortions from Amazon Prime? Oh, exactly. My God.
No day delivery.
No day delivery, exactly.
That's right.
Oh, my
and,
God.
And you can watch Beastmaster as many times as you want. So there's the bonus. All right, Mike, thank you so much for joining us today. Rocky
thank
Man,
you
Mike,
guys.
Do you have anything you want me to promote? Do you want me to say, like, your Twitter handle? What's your Twitter?
I do not dislike Cynthia Oxney.
That was so awesome this week. That fire and rain response you created to your actual jingle for Cindy was out
was
fucking
funny.
Standing.
How
very
sweet funny. It is to be dissed by you.
Right. Of course, you can find Rocky Mountain Mike on Twitter. What's your handle, Rocky Mountain Mike? That's what it is.
At Rocky MNTN Mike.
There you go. Perfect. Jody Hamilton, meanwhile, is at the sexy liberal. I got confused. I was going to say the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network, and then I started to say the website address and saying thesexyliberal.com. I guess you could still say that. So she can be found at thesexyliberal.com as opposed to all the fake ones. And it's the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. They're From the Bunker Podcast. And you can also find that at from-the-bunker.com. And of course, the entire lineup of Sexy Liberal Podcasts is absolutely the best listening that you will ever experience. Jody Hamilton's From the Bunker podcast, Stephanie Miller's Happy Hour, Randy Rhodes' After Hours, Dino Bidala's I Want to Be Your Muslim Friend, Sanity with John Fugelsang. Catch the latest episodes. Really, really great. Final Word with Frangela, the great Rude Pundit, Proud Resister, so many more to come. Please make sure to go to all of your favorite sexy liberal podcasts and give them a 5-star rating review on Apple Podcasts. It's not iTunes anymore because Apple has to do all kinds of screwy shit to screw us over. Maybe that's not a good thing to say live on the show in case anyone from
Goodbye,
Apple
Scruffles.
Is listening. Yeah, suddenly Bob Seska Show disappears off of Apple Podcasts. Where's my show? All right, thanks for listening. We got the Postmortem Show coming up next. BobSeskaShow.com if you want to subscribe. We'll see you over there, folks. Bye-bye.